Hey, welcome back. We just finished with awesome George Gammon, and we're back straight into another part of a very close Confederate mate and colleague, Chris McIntosh, who we had on our channel not so long ago. Well, actually, it was a while now. I think the beginning of the year. Really, really popular. Thoroughly enjoyed conversation. And also someone who knows the Southern African hemisphere as well with me. Super glad to have you, Chris. Welcome back, and thanks for being part of our stream here.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Don't tell me. You sound a little bit glum. Don't tell me you had money in FTX, Chris.
Yeah, I put all my life savings in it. I heard Tom Brady was doing it. I thought it must be a good idea.
It must be. No wonder his missus is divorcing him. Oh, dear. What a year he's had.
I was thinking about it, actually. They should have just waited. They got divorced before it. Imagine all the money that the lawyers made. If they just waited... They could have just split the, you know, what was left in the pantry and be done with it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It was a budget divorce after all. The guy's still going to be playing football when he's 56. I'm going to go with a Zimmer frame. Anyway, I also suffered, so I won't laugh too much. Anyway, good to have you on. The Great Awakening is the theme. But I suppose give you a chance to warm up. We had a bit of a softer inflation number. Your take on everything. I'm of the view the dollar super spike still comes. We're having a bit of a reaction now. Powell doesn't have too much choice. He's still got to do some tightening until something breaks in probably the debt markets. We were discussing that with George. What would you add, and what's your take on yesterday's number? Kick in there and give us your quick takes.
On a broad basis, they can't keep rates above the level of inflation. Real inflation. So that's going to be the case on a go forward basis. So keep that in mind. Real inflation is always going to outpace whatever they manage to do, because they will break the system and they cannot raise rates to, if you take the Taylor rule, they should be over 9%.
Correct.
So that's not going to happen. That's the first thing. The second thing is that things go in waves. We've had the first wave where people woke up and were like, holy smokes, we've got a problem here. Because they kept getting told that everything was transitory or good or something of that nature, and they're realizing that they've been lied to. And so things overshot a little bit in the short term. Now they're coming back. Now it's like, oh, actually 7.7 or even under 8 is a good print, right? If you go back a year ago, that would have been scary for most. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You know, so there is a realization that we have this, it's going to be with us for some time. And so things spiked a bit. Now there's like, that's a better than expected result. It's still bullshit because they're still hedonically adjusting everything, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's really just largely noise. I'm not a trader like yourself. I'm looking at the long term. I'm saying, where do I need to be positioned for the next 5 years out plus? And on that basis, inflation is going to be higher than the rates that they print. The US has the ability to raise rates to the extent that other central banks do not. And that divergence between bond markets is going to continue, and it is going to create massive problems in emerging markets. 2023 is going to be the year of emerging market sovereign defaults, and that's going to send the dollar even higher.
Right. Who are we starting with? Because we know Turkey and South Africa aren't exactly bastions of propriety. Who's going to go? I love that. And I love that you've straight out come out with a prediction and emerging market. I thought this would have happened already personally on a much bigger scale. I'm amazed to the extent that it has not yet been IMF rolling bailouts of various nation states. Who do you think is the most vulnerable, and where should we be positioning? And it's going to be in the currencies. So the traders amongst us, what are we going to be doing? Because actually the Rand's gained a bit of strength recently against the dollar with this dollar weakness. The lira is kind of, we know it's in losing value, but it hasn't been chronic recently. Where do you stand? Which one's the best?
Pakistan looks problematic, as does Egypt. there's something else that I think is worth mentioning.
Yeah.
Nothing happens in a vacuum.
Of course.
So while the US and the Western hegemon is actually, they understand what they're doing, and they are trying to create vassal states, is what they're trying to do at a financial level, at a military level, at an economic level. That's been the case ever since Bretton Woods, but at an accelerating pace, because we have now in the Western world a financialized debt-based system that needs to be reset. It needs to be reset because it's reached the end of its lifespan. That's that long-term global debt cycle. So that's all well and good. We understand that. But while that is taking place, there are also alternatives. Other countries aren't stupid. They don't. They have been forced into a situation now, increasingly, where they are forced to decide how they go about moving forwards. This is why we are seeing the BRICS forming very quickly around building a new monetary system.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen. That's not going to be smooth. It's going to be very chaotic.
Yes.
But they are being forced to take that stance. And as such, I expect that there will be some willful defaults. And they will willfully default to people like the IMF and the World Bank, because they will have an alternative that gets built that allows them to continue to function with credit and with trade amongst, shall we say, friendly nations. That's all happening right now, or the formation of it is happening right now.
Right.
And it's very important to understand the world in that context. So because people are tending to focus on the world that we have known, which is a dollar-based, credit-based world. In that world, the US reigns supreme, and they are winning, and they are creating vassal states. But again, nothing happens in a vacuum. So what is important from a currency perspective for me is to not actually look at the currencies, but look at what underpins them. So if we look at what is value, what are we short in the world? Where are the shortages of supply? Where are we seeing the greatest levels of inflation? It all brings you down largely to energy, commodities in general, but energy in particular. And then if you look at the countries that are the largest producers of those that are, shall we say, ideologically, economically aligned and in contrast to the woke ideological Western-led system at this point in time, I can see that all bifurcating. It's interesting for me because I can go and we can invest into those currencies without investing in the currency. You can simply invest in the energy. You can invest in the commodities, which will, during the course of this decade, form the new currency systems that these governments are looking at forming. So we don't need to decide what that currency might look like. Is it going to be some SDR type reserves asset? Yes, probably, maybe. I don't care. We don't need to worry about that right now. What we can invest in are the underlying monetary instruments that will back that currency, because they are the largest in shortage of supply, and they are simultaneously the lowest they have been, both in real and absolute terms, often in history. So that's kind of how I'm looking at the currency side, how it pulls into where I need to be allocating my capital to.
So I like that. So what we're actually saying is ignore currencies. Debt can be reneged on, especially to the American system. They can join a new cartel of BRICS. What do they actually own and hold that is needed that was going to likely give them cash flow? And how much do they need the other way? So it's almost looking at each nation state again as if they're starting again and saying, what assets do they have? What can they sell? What do they provide? And what do they need to import? And if they have a positive cash flow in terms of import need, it's a very granular basis of looking at it, but I like it. It's almost saying who, if everything is set to zero, actually starting afresh, is going to have a positive cash flow. And who needs to import a whole bunch of energy, doesn't make much, or makes things people will no longer want, need, or desire, and is going to be on a negative cash flow. And what do you determine from that? Which of the emerging nations could come out strong? Commodities and things are obviously important. So in that sense, does being in South Africa, at least they have a bit of platinum, a bit of gold. Australia, we were looking at this, Canada, have a lot of useful things, but they've gone complete woke governmentally, politically. So who do we get that's not in the woke camp, but has Russia obviously stands out. They're families orientated. and their stock market's in the absolute toilet, they seem a worthwhile consideration.
Russia is very, very interesting, but it's essentially the BRICS. And what you're going to find, and we look back to history, this is most probable, is that there will be new alliances formed, and within those alliances, one particular economic system will reign supreme, right? The 80-20 principle will reassert itself.
Yeah.
So with them, is that going to be, because if you take the BRICS, you've got your Russia, your India, your China, your Saudi Arabia, who are going to be joining Brazil. There's very different economic systems, but broadly, most of them are essentially industrializing production-based systems, as opposed to the West, which is a financialized credit-based system. And they've run out of rope on that one.
And London and the UK. Yeah, I love that. And I've been of that view as well. Everything where hyper-financialization has taken place, Britain gave up manufacturing, gave up coal mining. Coal's a more useful thing than derivatives and lawyers in investment banks at the moment right now. And we sort of back to basics. This is very anti-metaverse because I've kind of said this. This whole concept is we're going to go back to physicality of things. I love this message point. And it's completely contrary to the virtual reality goggles and the metaverse and owning land in La La Land, which is in the, you know, a finite, a digitally created finite. We also had Bronwyn on, who was pointing out that there's these fake scarcities that are very virtual and digital, whilst there's real and there's a lot of manufactured scarcities by control systems to actually involve piracy and maximal extraction. And you seem to be tapping into that. So are we first dipping? It's kind of like the dot-com boom was metaverse, but then you had to have the big bust before this metaverse 3.0 zone world comes in. Or is that going to be something that only goes into the Western world? Or is it global? Do we dip first and go back to physical, practical things, sticks and stones again, before all this virtual reality?
Well, look, if we just broadly look at the commodity markets, they run in cycles, right? We're about, we could argue, 2 to 3 years into the first part of that cycle. We, at our firm, we believe this is going to be a structural, long-term, massive bull market in commodities. If it's just a very ordinarily one, we still have at least 5 years left in this thing.
Yeah,
that's the first thing to remember. With respect to metaverse, blockchain, all this kind of stuff. Yes, I think we're going through that sort of dot-com type thing. It's got to crash, but that's only going to come out within another 10, 15, 20 years. I think it's far further out than most people think. The other component behind it that is important for people to understand, you can only have R&D when you have excess income or excess surplus savings.
Yeah,
we're going through a contractionary phase.
Money being killed.
And we need it because so much money has been spent and wasted in that space that it needs to have a massive washout. If you look at the sectors that we're very concentrated on, and I was going to mention a bunch of companies we're just buying now in the offshore oil and gas space, which is easily the most decimated space and the most asymmetric in my humble opinion. I've lost count of how many companies have gone away in that space, right? Over the course of the last decade, plus some. We need to see the same sort of thing taking place in the metaverse growth, hyper-financialized sort of economic sectors, if you will. So I don't see that as being something that I need to really pay a whole lot of attention to right now, unless you're on the short side, which we're not. We basically tend to be typically long only with little short positions, maybe as hedges or something of that description. But for the traders out there, I don't think we're done with that yet. We need to see real washout, and we're going to see the washout flow all the way through to real tangible companies like Apple and Google and Microsoft and everything else. So that's kind of how I think that starts or continues to play out. We have like I said, structural shortages. While at the same time, the only way to solve these problems that the central bankers and governments have is by printing more money. Yeah. So the two in combination leave us with very little question as to where we're going to go with these particular underlying assets. So if we look at commodities, I think it's a must be invested long-term space. And like I said, in particular, we're very interested in the offshore oil and gas space right now. Absolutely asymmetric. I mean, you've got companies trading with no debt, very profitable, and they're mini caps, you know, $150 million, $200 million companies, which there's no competition left. That space is going to heat up. And that's where I think on the geopolitical side of things, things are going to get interesting. If you've got an offshore rig company, you're going to go to the highest bidder. If the highest bidder happens to be Chinese, you're not going to care.
Of course not.
Right? So there will be a competition for offshore assets. There will be a competition for energy. And you cannot fight any war without energy. You don't have a political system without energy security, as the Germans are finding out.
Yeah.
So this is increasingly going to become very, very important. The risk, one of the risks, there are many. One of the risks is that we see nationalization of assets as we move through into a more fractious geopolitical environment. I don't see any way of necessarily mitigating that risk other than paying attention and being diversified. The obvious things that one can do is to stay away from, countries which are woke. So Rishi Sunak, for example, has just come out. He's made it very clear that the noises that that were made by his predecessor about opening up oil and gas are dead in the water. So, do you go and invest into a company that has got domestic onshore UK assets? Probably not. You could have a UK listed company that happens to have offshore assets in off the coast of Turkey. That's fine. The Turks are going to go after it with the help of the Russians. So it's important to understand that sort of context of what's happening in the world, and then look at the assets and look at who is going to go after them, who's going to be woke, who's not going to be woke, along with all of the general stuff of valuing a company's assets and cash flows and so on and so forth.
I love that, because I do think these people are pinning. I mean, what was the first thing Sunak said? Is he straight away went out, his first comment was all three green things, and he spoke of raising green debt. I mean, he couldn't have hit more alarm bells as a policy. I'm going watermelon communism, I'm going to raise more debt with a green theme. And this was the first thing he came out. And then it's all about climate. It's all about that. He was literally World Economic Forum programmed. It could have been Klaus Schwab. It could have been Trudeau. It could have been any of these clowns speaking. And you've got someone else like, say, Putin's Russia, where they're pro-family values. And there's a more welcoming culture. Actually, it's ironic to be saying an ex-Soviet state. You've got Turkey nation that are wanting to assert themselves here around Cyprus to ensure that they get their claim on any energy that's found in the Levant Basin. This is where the real money and is going to be made. And I can't see how Germany and the UK can even think to afford that their current green policies and positioning. And I can't think you should want to be in any nation state that is going to make it unerringly difficult for you to do old world energy type things. It's absolutely bizarre. Rick Rule we spoke to, and he highlighted a silver miner that was trading exceedingly cheap in Russia. And he's one or two equities and stocks. And in talking to George before, he said you were the guy to refer to on, well, energy plays clearly, offshore gas, equities. You might have done the balance sheet deep dives. He's sort of the 36,000 feet up view. Do you have any equities specific that you really like that are non-woke nation, that are offshore, debt-free, unrivaled competition all cleaned out, who would you spit out for us on that?
Look, we've just put out an alert and have within our fund been buying, upping our exposure, already fairly weighted exposure to offshore oil and gas. We've already got exposure to companies like Tidewater, CGG, Subsea 7, a whole bunch. We've just picked a number, and now what do we buy? Seven new companies. What do we got? Cathedral Energy. So this is like a micro cap. I think the market cap's about $150 million. What's interesting with this company, these are directional drilling, offshore oil and gas, in Western Canada, United States. And they've been buying up for the last couple of years, other companies as they've been vaporized. They bought up six other companies. What you're essentially seeing is this consolidation.
Yeah.
Right. Think about it. You get M&A at the top of the cycle and at the bottom of the cycle.
Yes.
M&A at the top, they're just using all this bloody overvalued equity. And what do we do with it? Oh, let's buy it more. And every time you buy it more, the market rewards you for it.
Yeah.
Which is insane often. That's often the top end of that cycle. So you'll see M&A at the end, peak end.
And that's the bad cycle. M&A, so because they end up writing off lots of goodwill. M&A. That's the bad M&A. And then the one at the bottom.
Now we've had the good M&A, right, which is this consolidation. Like I said, I've lost count of how many of these bloody offshore oil and gas companies have gone out of business over the last decade. So anyway, Cathedral Energy is one. Another one is Oil States International. Another oil and natural gas. These guys are, what have they got? They've got drill rigs, offshore oil vessels, subsea pipeline infrastructure. They do a lot of these floating production systems. So we're buying them. And if you look at any of these companies I'm mentioning, and you pull up like a long-term chart back to, anyway, from sort of 2010, you'll see which was the last sort of peak. 2012, 13 was the last peak in that energy cycle. These things all have collapsed down, and then, you know, they look like the ECG on a dead guy for the last 10 years plus. Yeah. And what's happened in that phase, of course, is they've had debt restructurings, massive consolidations. Like I said, a lot of them have gone away and have been acquired by other companies, you know. So when you go back to Cathedral, which I was mentioning, you'll see the chart looks like it. What the chart doesn't tell you is that they've been acquiring assets. So Cathedral Energy back in 2012 is not the same Cathedral Energy as it is in 2022.
Yeah. Right?
At least based on their assets. And they're still dirt cheap. Short-term chart, you'll look at them and actually they're already up, on like a 12-month time frame. But long-term, you can see these things have got a long, long way to go. Another one is Expro Group. These guys combined with what was called Franks International, which is a manufacturer of drill pipes. Here's the thing. You can't run any of these things without drill pipes, and there's a massive shortage of supply in drill pipe manufacturing.
Yeah.
These all these extra service stocks to the energy sector.
Yeah.
And so what people have looked at, they're going, oh, energy's going up. Oh, I'll go buy ExxonMobil. Fine, there's nothing wrong with that. But when you get into, you know, seismic, offshore, all of that stuff and the service companies to them. Man, these things can be like rocket ships. They like can be like crypto when you get, when things move. So that's another one we bought. Another well-known one is Diamond Offshore, which we've owned, which we're bumping up our exposure to. These guys have got drill ships. Again, in this space, they're like a bigger sort of play, largely because they got much more CapEx type business. So they got these huge costs. I mean, a drill ship cost some 10 years ago, these things were costing $500 to $800 million to build. And this was very capital intensive. So, you know, a lot of this stuff tends to be debt financed. And we know what it's like being like in that offshore oil and gas space. In fact, if you and I, Francis, ran out now, set up a company, and we said, okay, we want to go and finance this stuff, and we trotted our shop around New York, London, we'd be laughed at by every single institutional investor or shown the door. Why? Because it's not ESG compliant, and it's in this fossil fuel space, which is all killing the planet, yeah, and the brown spotted owl and everything else with it.
Yeah.
So your ability to finance in this space has been massively constricted. That's fantastic, because what it means
barriers to entry. No competition. Yeah, barriers to entry. Even I get it.
So that's a good one. What else would we buy? Gulf Marine. These guys, about half their market cap's in cash.
There's a German and a, there's a, sorry, Gulf Marine. Let me put, I'm pulling up some of these charts as you speak. There's a LSE, London. You're talking UK or a German listing?
I think they're on the LSE.
Yeah.
And on, they might even be on Norway, on Oslo. Pretty sure they're on Oslo. I think it's Giphy on Oslo.
Yeah, like you say,
these... Gulf Island Fabrication.
Yeah, Gulf Marine. Gulf Marine is just like you say. I mean, it has actually traded at a 110, and as I'm on the UK LSE, I'm assuming that's £110, now trading £5.68.
Yep. What else you can look at? Nine Energy. These guys provide sort of completion service for unconventional wells, cementing and sort of completion tools, things like that.
So did you say stuff nine?
People don't even look at.
What was the name again there?
Nine.
Nine, the number nine. Nine. Yeah. Energy.
N-I-N-E.
Yeah. Energy.
Take a look at the chart.
Yeah. I'm pulling them up as you chat just to give the guys something now to look at.
Just on that one, note that that one does have quite a bit of debt. Right. So like, I wouldn't go out and just don't pick one of these.
Yeah.
Buy them as a basket.
Yeah.
If you buy, what are these, six, seven companies, and one of them goes away, and say nine manages to not roll their debt and they go away.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter, right? These other things are gonna, so, but because it has that debt and the market's turning, that can have obviously, you know, ramp up margin expansion for the company.
Yeah.
Debt's not bad, it's just you need to understand what you're buying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another got some risk. KLX. KLX Energy. They provide onshore oil field services, drilling, completion production, intervention activities. They're like fixed, technically demanding wells, things like that. Basically, it's a direct play on a pickup in rig count in the US.
Rig count's going up. They do have some
debt.
Yeah.
They do have some debt as well with KLX. So, you know, there's a basket of seven companies. I will put my hand on my heart and say within the next 5 years, if you've bought these things and you've lost money, then I'll completely fuck this up. But I cannot see that happening. They're dirt cheap. We're in an energy crisis. Nobody's been looking at the offshore oil and gas space. And that's all going to change. And it's beginning to change because you're starting to see the capital flows coming in. And again, this, you know, this drives you back into the whole geopolitical situation. If you, because people will often look at stuff and say, oh, you bought this company, it's in Canada, but Canada's woke. I'm like, I don't care. If the company's assets, if they happen to have an offshore, operation off the coast of Guyana, and the Canadian government give them hell, guess what they'll do? They'll go and relist it in Singapore, or they'll relist it in Hong Kong, or they'll relist it on the LSE or somewhere else, just like the South Africans used to do. Remember when you had all of the woke, black empowerment and all that kind of nonsense came in?
Yeah.
Anything that was domestic in South Africa, the companies kept them. Anything that they had offshore, they stripped them out, put them into another company and relisted them on the LSE.
Yeah.
That's what they did.
Yeah.
So that's what will happen. It's important to then note, look and see where are the actual operations of the company. Where it happens to be listed at this point in time is less of an issue.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, it's like many of them. I mean, Fresnillo is a silver miner, but all the assets are Mexico. It's what happens in Mexico with the government that matters almost more. And as you say, so yeah, this is fascinating. Some real energy gas, some real alpha here from Chris for you to have a look at. By the way, this is non-advisory. He's quite made it quite clear. If you took just one of them could have a debt incident and could go bust. If you had the whole portfolio and the super cycle of commodities that we anticipate would come, it would be a big surprise if you don't, as a collective whole, don't do reasonably well to possibly very well without any guarantees, it being about the future, of course. That's awesome. What else industry-wise? I mean, you've gone in energy. You're energy. What about metals? Are we wrong? Are they gonna, because they're monetized and they never want the constraints of gold backing? Is silver and gold never gonna have the energy boom? Could energy get completely dislocated from metals? Because I used to do a lot of gold-based, commodity-based valuations. I used to do oil. I mean, our single-digit oil call was based on a dislocation between oil and gold valuation, and we expected gold to have a run and oil to clash. And that ended up happening. But should we be expecting the metals to do? And of course,
No,
there's different metals. There's industrial and there's precious. So give us your take on the two categories.
okay. So in the industrial metal side, let's target that for a minute. What we have, of course, well, firstly, we have a shortage of supply because everything mining has been tainted with a brush of carbon. Okay, that combined with a typical cyclical commodity bear market, which we came out of, leads one to at least not be short commodities in general. If we take copper in particular, which is kind of the bedrock, because a lot of these other base metals come out of copper mines as byproducts
Yeah,
of them,
including silver.
we are we're structurally short in that space. And then, of course, we've got those green initiatives, which says that we're going to run the world on batteries and solar and wind and so on and so forth. That takes absolutely extraordinary amounts of copper, together with lithium and cobalt and a bunch of other rats and mice in the metal space. So we're pretty bullish on it, less so than for example, the offshore oil and gas, only because that's what's been more decimated and is actually has much, much higher return on energy. Oil and gas is far better than a stupid freaking battery, to be quite frank.
Yeah.
So, but we're not short. We're long to a certain percentage within our portfolio. With respect to precious metals, my belief has always been that we will have a boom in that when people realize that we're in a monetary crisis. This is a monetary reset. This
Yes.
is akin to World War II when we went through a monetary reset. This time we're just going through another monetary reset.
Yeah.
So and that's different to inflation. Monetary resets can be inflationary, obviously, but they're coming at it from different angles. And so I've always argued with people when they say, "Oh, we're going to have inflation, I'm going to buy gold." I'm like, "No, if you have inflation, you buy energy." And that's if you just go back and you have a look at the actual historical data on this, the best returns in any inflationary period
Is energy.
are energy.
Yes.
And gold, I think, comes down maybe like number five down the chart. So we own it, but I think it's coming a little bit later. The other component behind all metals, but if you just think about something like gold, gold is really just the spread between the diesel price and spot. Because think about it like this: you've got your input costs, and this is true of mining, farming,
Diesel.
basically Maslow's
Yeah.
hierarchy of needs, if you will. Your input costs, if those go up, and your subsequent whatever it is you're producing, whether it's hogs, cattle, gold, if that doesn't rise sufficiently, then you start losing money. If you lose money for too long, you go out of business. And so what when you see an energy spike and an energy crisis like we're having, these other rats and mice over here need to rise sufficiently before they become actually profitable.
Yes.
And we've not yet seen that happen in gold, for example.
Yeah.
Right? So all your gold mines, massive diesel costs. Right? Yeah. Even once you get the product out of the ground, you got to stick it on ships and send it. So that's more energy. Distillers, energy. Yeah. If you're a farmer, what are your two biggest costs? Diesel and fertilizer. And how do you make fertilizer? Natural gas and potash. How do you get potash? You mine it. How do you mine it? Diesel. So it's basically diesel.
Yeah. And we're having a shortage of that as well, particularly diesel in the energy.
That's my point.
Yeah. More so than petrol. In fact, the price has flipped in South Africa. And it might flip in a number of other countries as well.
And
they're trying to turn us out of diesel in our cars as well. They want us all back into petrol cars. Carbon, we're killing the planet, yada, yada, fish-based nonsense. So diesel is actually the real stuff. It's the real gold of the energy industry.
And Francis, part of that whole component there is that diesel can be utilized in so many different things. So if you take your electrical grid, you can easily switch out coal and use diesel. So we've got what we're getting is often in this instance now, we're getting a lot of transfer where diesel is being utilized where it wasn't previously utilized.
Generators.
Hence, this,
in South Africa, Eskom down.
Yeah.
Diesel. They all.
So
you can have a small thing that does next to nothing petrol. The minute you want to run a proper house or a business or a complex or a shopping mall, diesel gens. Sorry,
diesel gens. But this is now obviously a huge issue in Europe. So what we're going to see there is we're going to see a switch from gas to liquids, right? Because you can't use nuclear. You haven't got the infrastructure to do it. And now they're saying they're going to use natural gas. No, they're not going to use natural gas because they haven't got the terminals to take in the natural gas that they say they're going to get from the Americans who don't actually have sufficient natural gas to send to them. So that's all bullshit.
Yeah.
Yes, some of it's going to take place, but it's not going to take place to the extent that it is required to run European energy infrastructure. They're going to have to ship in diesel and they're going to also ship in coal. That's what they're going to do.
Coal and
which
diesel.
Is why we've been long tanker stocks, because why are they going to ship it? They're going to need lots of tankers. Day rates are climbing. We're going to print money on tankers. So that's another.
I'm sitting in Cyprus. Guys have been investing in the tankers and they are getting killer amount of money right now. The ships, the guys sitting in Switzerland, that houses here, they're going long, long, long. They're putting and it's on energy tankers. It's not cargo.
Yep.
It's not containers.
No. You
don't
want,
is totally different
game.
You don't
want game. Your liners.
Yeah. Don't get this wrong to those listening. Yeah.
I had this question the other day, people saying, oh, shipping, you can go and buy a boat, which is the ETF. No. Boats, I think about 40 to 50% of it is container ships.
Yeah.
Don't want a container ships. You want your tanker stocks.
Tankers. Yeah.
Tankers.
This is fascinating.
Anyway,
so diesel.
Synthetic to that whole energy
what's the most natural diesel play? What? Give me one play that's the most leveraged. Is it these stocks we were talking about? Is there how? Because I'm a believer in diesel. I think diesel is going to be demanded. They're going to have to do everything to get it. I think it's like second to coal. It's ahead of coal even. The most natural diesel play.
The most asymmetric, because the way that we look at stuff, you can look at a component and you go, okay, maybe they'll buy something there. But then you look at the second order effects. Is there something more that's asymmetric in that space? The most asymmetric we've found in the diesel play, in the gas to liquids transition, is tanker stocks. Go and buy a basket of tanker stocks. You can buy TK, you can buy anything. There's a bunch of them. So we've been talking about them we've been talking about tanker stocks and buying them back from beginning of this year. So they're up a bunch now, but they've got a long ways to run. So that's where I think the most asymmetry lies like you're not buying diesel, but you kind of are buying diesel. They're going to be transporting the diesel.
No,
and
I get it.
The biggest, because there's a couple of things in that people need to understand in shipping. We've had massive curtailment of ships in general. These things are always debt financed. You go and you put these things on the water, you're talking 30, 40, 50, $100 million ships.
Huge
They're
debt.
not cheap. Huge debt. And they went through
And
the
can I
cycle,
also
they all got
say,
wiped out.
can I interrupt? The financing for oil tankers has gone exceedingly expensive, and banks have been highly risk averse. So the barrier to entry now is also extortionately high. Try go con a bank into giving you 60 million to get two tankers. Yeah, sorry, carry on.
So
I just thought.
they're being constrained on financing also because of this massive woke agenda.
Yes, of
You
course.
cannot invest. So one of our clients who is on the board of a sovereign wealth fund, I won't say who it is because I don't want to get in trouble, but essentially this fund cannot invest in anything that basically we're investing into by mandate. The government had mandated that they cannot do it. So you've got entire big Western sovereign wealth funds who cannot invest in this stuff. So your credit is not there. You go back and you look, a lot of the shipyards shut down, Francis, back in like 2014. And then, so even if we wanted to put more ships on the water, A, we haven't got the finance. B, there isn't the capacity at the shipyards to actually go and build them. C, even if there was all of those components, they don't get built in a heartbeat. It
No, they
takes
take
years to
ages.
build them.
Yeah.
They take ages to be built. And we need this stuff literally. Europe needs it tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's it. So you have all these converging events, which mean that the day rates on these things are just going to keep climbing. And
And
they're going to
because they
keep
hate
printing
them,
money.
and because they want to long run cancel them, and they have everybody believing that it's the end of this industry, no one will finance them. But because of all of those things, and because of ESG and bottlenecks and capital not being allowed to play, they have actually created a perfect blockage that makes any existing player that is already financed and operational almost
He's got a
captured.
moat around him.
Yeah, it's like they've shut the
You
door
think
and.
about Warren Buffett's moat? You know,
Yeah,
he always wants a moat
moat.
around his
Yeah, it's
businesses.
exactly. No, you're
There's a
the.
massive moat around these things.
Yeah, the boats are all an oligopoly essentially that have got through. And they're going to be needed far longer than they tell you. All these things to go win, to go all of this. This is such puffy bullshit. It's going to take so long. And the whole crisis that they're claiming, it's all horseshit, as we know. But there's, so it goes. So this is a, this, you're getting me excited. I mean, who's not watching the thing here? Have you given us a share and a like for what the bombs that Chris is dropping here on this stream? Look at what you're learning. Look at what you're hearing. Look at the quality here. This is real gold being dropped right now. Everyone, please, you should be giving this a share and saying thank you to Chris McIntosh for some of this, because this is real alpha. I love that the tanker is the leverage play for diesel, because it has to be moved around. Where it's being found is not where it's needed. You've got an entire continent. They're going to probably need generators. We've spoken of the winter of discontent that is coming for Germany, for Britain, and everything else. Let me tell you, anything that runs, anything of any scale that is a generator runs on diesel. Everything runs on diesel. Diesel and coal is now needed more than anything else, and it has to get there. This is a leverage play, and nobody can get finance. You can't start one of these businesses up. You'd probably have to have the 100 million in the bank. You'd only be able to get one or two tankers to start, and you know nothing about it, and you've never operated it. Wow. I mean, barriers to entry. That is a compelling case. I'm excited about that. That's awesome, Chris. What else would you say or add on that, or any other areas that are catching interest?
Oh, there's so much. I mean, fertilizer is one that we've been in. It's had its first run. It's pulled back. It's pulled back because of the cost components in production of fertilizer. But again, as I mentioned before, as your energy costs rise and your underlying product that you're producing, if that doesn't rise sufficiently, you have an imbalance. But in the fertilizer market, that reacts really quickly on growing cycles. So fertilizer, I believe, going through 2023 is going to do very, very well. So you've got Mosaic, you've got Nutrien, you've got ICL. Those are three that I can think of off the top of my head. I think they're all going to do pretty well. Because again, you have to have it. You have to have your diesel to heat your house, but you also have to have food. You can't produce food at the scale that we've been producing it in this world without fertilizer. End of story.
It's a
you've got to have fertilizer and you've got to have diesel in the farming space.
Yeah.
So if I think about farming, I go, how do I really want to be long farming with leverage? It's fertilizer stocks. The other thing that is interesting with them is that they're not geographically constrained in the same way as a farm is. Like if you and I got a farm down in the East Cape or something, right? We're at the bloody mercy of the government and whatever they might do. We're also at the mercy of the weather and all these other things. If we've got a fertilizer company, we can transport that fertilizer anywhere in the world. We can ship it to whoever's going to pay us the highest price for it.
Yes.
And many of these companies also have fertilizer operations in multi-jurisdictions. So there's a diversification element that exists with a fertilizer company, which doesn't exist with a farming operation.
That is very powerful. It doesn't go off, does it? It travels well. It's not like food. It doesn't need too special a packaging. I mean, you don't want it to get wet or whatever, but it's not like eggs and avocados, is it, as a product? It
can be stored.
Yeah, it can be stored.
We could go and buy, you know, bags and bags of the stuff and stick it in a warehouse somewhere and just let it sit on it and use it as like a leveraged long play.
Yeah.
So you can do that. You can't do that with beef cattle, or, you know, at least not slaughtered beef cattle to the same way. Or, yeah.
I want to add on to somebody else who was early on in the show that you weren't party to, Chris, that was making a similar play. Bronwyn Williams was a futurist, and she was saying you want all the things that they are currently cornering. You know, of course, of Bill Gates and the farmland, and the they're creating containments and bottlenecks. They're creating ransom points on the supply and going to call scarcity, but they've actually manufacturing scarcities. And the game has been that, and farming is one of them. And the key concept that Chris is now answering from the earlier part of the stream that Bronwyn was warning was coming as the trend is if you want a leverage position to farming, it's fertilizer. It's one order on from the diesel. So it has the knock-on input cost of the diesel, but then it will roll. But it's a quick turnaround one where mining might be a little bit longer. Chris was indicating for your metals, the costs keep going up and you're just making marginal profits for a long time until you really have a surge in the gold. So it might come a little later. That has been super, super useful. Any others? What were the other trends that she said? Well, we know they're trying to corner farming and the food supply chain. We also know that they're trying to do it in energy. I think we've discussed both of those. What are the other big macros that we were being warned about? The surveillance.
Well, I think it's communications. I think communications is one of them. If you look about, so what have we had? We've had these distractions. COVID was a distraction for them to print trillions of dollars and transfer billions and billions of dollars to the oligarchy.
Correct.
Right? And people were too distracted and fearful and hiding under their duvets to see what was taking place. And then the next distraction, to some extent, is Ukraine, but it's not gathering the support amongst the hoi polloi that they're requiring. And I don't think they're going to go nuclear, because that's not their objective.
No.
So what I think the next issue is going to, well, we've got climate change, climate hysteria, threatening everybody that we're all going to be dying within 12 years if we don't do something that they tell us to do. That one's an easier one to see in that there's a bifurcation there. The BRICS are not interested in that. Russia has no interest in that. China has no interest in that. Turkey has no interest in that. All we need to see is who's turned up at their conference to drink this champagne and Kool-Aid and who has not. And so that's quite an obvious setup. So that's one's not going to be playing out to the extent that they want. It's going to play out in the Western world and there's enough Muppets to believe it, but it's bifurcating the world to a greater extent. The other thing then that I think they're going to bring in is actually going to be potentially some cyber event, and that is now it's all trying to get us towards the central bank digital currency, pushing us closer and closer towards carbon tracking of your carbon purchases, central bank digital currency, social credit system, all that. So that's, I think, one of the other risks. The best way to mitigate that is, we've probably run out of time, but that's like a discussion for another day.
What were you going to say on telcos? Because we've got just a few minutes left. Our next guest is already in the house, Lynette Zhang. What were you going to say on telcos and how's that one? Where's the bottlenecks and the compression points for us there?
So that's where you start stepping into the decentralized world, right? And you got to look at the alternatives that you can utilize that exist in the decentralized world. I don't think it's mere coincidence that Russia, for example, are now accepting blockchain related types of transactions, right? While at the same time, what we're seeing in the West is them championing, especially after FTX, championing that we need more regulation and more control, i.e. centralization in that space. So at this point in time, Russia actually just wants to have people breaking away from the Western-based system.
Yeah.
That means they don't have control of it. They don't care at this point. At some point, they will. Every country is going to want to have centralization.
Yeah.
But that bifurcation allows us some level of freedoms within watching that space. So that's where I think on a personal level, one needs to have rails essentially set. And that includes in banking and brokerage in these jurisdictions. And then watch how things play out. But you've got to have your rails in place so that you can put carriages on the rails if and when you're required to do so.
So establish,
if you have some cyber polygon type event, I don't think it's going to be global. They're not going to be able to pull it off on a global basis.
Yeah.
And you're going to start seeing this thing splitting very, very quickly.
Yeah. So the bifurcation trend, it's not so much an investment, but the bifurcations. It's time for people to have banking in the BRICS nations. It's time for people to do payments on blockchain and to do all the things the West doesn't want you to do, go set up those existences. In fact, we've been talking about Panama. We've been talking about having a Georgia bank account. I know you're a fan of Dubai. We must have a chat about and an update of some of the news and developments, you and I off stream. But wow, Chris, we could have done another hour. This has been awesome. Our next guest is unfortunately waiting. Thank you so much for giving you pearls of wisdom. You can see I've scribbled notes all over your screen. You will have a look at the video later. Thanks for sharing so openly for all our community and the followers of the Market Sniper channel. How do people engage directly with you? You've earned it. Tell us.
So for accredited clients, if you're interested in our fund management services, that's glenorgiecapital.net. For our publication services, go to capitalistexploits.at.
CapitalistExploits.at. You'll get the Glenn Orgy name. I'm not going to try to spell it. I'll cock it up. Chris McIntosh, thank you so much for coming on. I look forward to having a follow-up, just you and me chat anyway on a number of other things. We'll be out Panama way. Great to see you. And thank you so much for your time. Have a great one and see you again soon.
Thank you so much.
Bye for now.
Take care.
Will do. Bye for now.